Joining us on the podcast today, we've got Bill Andrews, President and CEO at Exagrid. Bill, thanks for being on.
Hey, thank you for letting us join the call.
Bill, if I'm looking at this right, you've been there for 15 years. Is that true?
Yeah, 15 years as the CEO of the company.
That's a pretty strong run. They've kept you around. You must be doing something right.
I don't know what it is. They say I'm the longest standing, company president now of a company like this. So I don't know.
So for those that don't know, just give a quick picture of what's going on at Exagrid.
Yeah, so clearly first, just the positioning of Exagrid, we're in backup storage, right? So we sit behind the backup applications, behind Veritas Net Backup, Oracle RMAN, Commvault, IBM Spectrum Protect Veeam, about 25 different backup applications as the backup storage. And we fit when you start to have longer-term retention, meaning if you're only going to keep 2, 3, 4 weeks of retention, you're going to use some low-cost primary storage disk from Dell, HP, NetApp, someone like that. But if you start to keep, 6 or 8 weeklies, 12, 24, 36 monthlies, plus some yearlies, then you're going to need longer-term retention, and that's where we fit. We're going to bring, first of all, very low-cost storage. We're going to be far lower cost than straight disk would be, or low-cost primary storage disk. And on top of that, the way our architecture works, and we can get into this later, we're going to give you a much better performance, both for backups and restores, as well as scalability, than the traditional deduplication appliances that are out there in the market.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking back because we run an EX 21000E in our environment, and we reviewed that back in October of 2014. And Kevin has had that as our primary target. Now, we'll take it offline sometimes if we're reviewing other products, but as our primary target for that, almost that entire time, so coming up on 6 years, and we were talking about it yesterday, the only thing he's ever had to service on that was a RAID card battery that just aged out, and I think you guys shipped us a new battery too. So we're doing pretty well with it. And I'm surprised they sent us a battery considering we're not exactly a paying customer.
Yeah, we tend to take care of our customers. We tell support, just do the right thing.
Yeah, well, we reviewed that and I can't remember who it was, but we just asked if it could maybe just stay off the truck for a little while and hang out in the lab. But seriously, it's been down there. It's in our lower production lab and just cranking away and doesn't really cause us any concern. And Kevin is blowing stuff up in the lab all the time. So making sure we can go get it back is always critical. But you still sell that model, that EX21000E.
Yeah, we have actually 9 different models from the EX3000 up to an EX63000, and each one of those can take in a certain amount of a full backup. So your EX21000E can take up to a 21 terabyte full backup. Our largest model, which is the EX63000E, can take up to a 63 terabyte full backup, and we can put those 32 of them into a scale-out system, so we can scale to over 2 petabytes in a full backup in a single system, which is now the largest system on the planet that includes data deduplication for long-term retention. And each one of our appliances as well is not just disk. It is memory, processor, network ports, and disk. So if you double, triple, quadruple, quintuple your data, we double, triple, quintuple the all of the resources of the memory, the processor, the network ports, etc. So it scales linear. So if your backup window is, 6 hours at 100 terabyte, it's 6 hours at 400 terabyte, it's 6 hours at 2 petabyte.
So it scales out
with all resources.
You're not just slamming JBODs on the back, I suppose is the point.
Right. And if you do that, if the other solutions in the market that have deduplication all do it the same way, they do what's called inline scale up. They do the deduplication between the backup application and the disk, which most people don't know this, but it'll slow your backups down by 2/3. Meaning whatever performance you get writing to straight disk, when you turn on an inline deduplication appliance, it will take you down about 30% of that performance because of the amount of compute it takes to do the deduplication. That becomes a bottleneck in front of the disk. And then you only have deduplicated data on the disk, which is also slow coming back. And then to your point, they only add disk. They don't add any more compute. So as the data grows and you need to deduplicate an ever-increasing amount of data, you're not adding any resources to do that. So guess what happens? As your data grows, your backup window grows. So our architecture, which is a two-tier architecture, meaning the front end is a disk cache landing zone where we just let you write straight to disk, no deduplication of the way. We keep the most recent backups in that landing zone so you can restore very quickly. But then we deduplicate the data into a second tier, which is a retention tier that keeps the long-term deduplicated data for long-term retention, and then plus the scale out. So what we end up with is speed of disk for backups, the speed of disk for restores, but also a fixed length backup window as your data grows. So we basically combined, you know, the power of, you know, disk on the front end with the power of a deduplication appliance on the back end and scale out to solve all the backup storage problems.
Well, so you hit on something there, and I want to make sure we spend some time, because the architecture is really a differentiator for you. And it's funny because back in 2014, I mean, this was the same thing. You haven't changed your approach, and the landing zone was always a big deal. And I don't know, honestly, even how much longer before 2014 you guys were doing that setup. But it's a big point, right, that you're not processing the data while writing it to the storage, that you're taking all the data fully hydrated to this landing zone and then post-process doing some manipulation to get the additional space savings. But from a backup process standpoint, just talk a little bit about why that landing zone is so important, other than the resources that you eat up in the box if you're doing inline.
Sure. So you really only have two choices besides Exagrid. The first choice is you can back up, as I mentioned, to any low-cost disk, right? You can buy some HPE Nimble or some Dell Compellent, or maybe you'll buy some NetIP series. And that works great behind a backup application, right? It's fast for backups. It's fast for restores. The challenge is if you start to keep, you know, 12 monthlies, 24 monthlies, the cost of that will eat you alive. So the performance is there, but the cost eats you alive. That then pushes you economically into using a deduplication appliance. So maybe you'll look at a Dell data domain or an HPE store once or a Veritas 5300 or 5400 appliance. And when we looked at those appliances, we said that's great because you get deduplication and it uses a lot less storage and fixes that economic issue that low-cost disk would have with longer-term retention. However, because they're doing that deduplication in line, it's, as I mentioned earlier, slowing everything down, slowing down the backup, slowing down the restores, doesn't scale, creates a whole new set of problems. One person once said to me, you fix the storage problem, but you create three new compute problems. So when we looked at that problem, we said, okay, then what do we have to do? How do we give everybody both? And that's when we realized you really want the speed of disk for backup and restore without any deduplication in the way. And there's your landing zone, the disk cache landing zone. And then you still need, though, for your long-term retention, your weeklies, monthlies, yearlies, a deduplicated data store, right, which becomes our retention tier. And we said you have to have both of those integrated to give somebody the low cost for long-term retention and at the same time the same performance as disk for a backup and restores. And then what we use is called adaptive deduplication. So it's not inline. You're not doing it on the way to the disk, so because we want to avoid that performance hit. And it's not post. Post is when you wait till all the backups are done and in which case you don't have as good an RTO and RPO on your DR site. We actually do what's called adaptive deduplication. Once the data is hitting the disk and while the backups are still coming in during your backup window, typically at night, we're doing the deduplication in parallel. We're just making sure that it's not in the way of performance to the disk and that we get to keep a most recent copy for fast restores. Then we immediately start deduplicating. So we're deduplicating into that to that second tier all night long as the backups are coming into us. We don't wait until the backups are complete.
Right. Well, that's a fair differentiation. So as you've done that and you've had more customer adoption and you've seen the growth of data, have you considered, because I know, you know, it was silly to suggest 5 or 6 years ago that flash could be used in backup scenarios, but have you looked at that? Have you considered that? Because I know there are, you know, others in the competitive landscape that have started to look at or are adopting SSDs in backup appliances.
Right. So there's two places you can put the flash. The first would be to accelerate what's called a hash table. That's not required by us because we don't have a hash table. But again, the data domains, the HP store ones, anybody that's in line keeps this huge hash table of blocks. It's like a lookup table. And if you put that in flash, you can try to accelerate the lookups faster. So you'll see a little bit of flash in every inline scale-up appliance, Veritas, HP, Dell, whatever. Right. In our case, we don't have that challenge, so we don't need flash there. The other place you would put flash is you would do an all-flash solution because, you know, you want faster storage, faster response for the restores. The problem is every single product on the market is in line, including Pure Storage has a product called FlashBlade. Their inline ingest rate is actually slower than data domain. You say, how can that be if it's flash? Because you're not writing directly to flash. You're writing through a controller that's got to do a process of breaking up all the data into some sort of zones, chunks, or blocks. Do compares. Decide what you already have and what you want to keep, what you don't already have, you know, et cetera. And as you go through that, it's huge. So it'll cut your performance back dramatically. So you can put flash behind in line, and the flash sits there asleep. It's rolling its thumb saying, come on, somebody throw me some data, because there's a bottleneck in front of it, which is this controller chunking away trying to do this compute-intensive deduplication. So flash does not help if you have an inline deduplication product. In fact, you don't even get to use the performance of flash. The second thing with flash, depending on what chart you look at, what articles you look at, and our CTO constantly tracks this, flash is 8 to 10 times the price per gigabyte of spinning disk. So if you look at HDD, spinning disk, and you look at flash, it's 8 to 10 times the price. Customers can barely, because of their retention, afford the systems that are out there today, never mind trying to pay 6 or 8 times the price for a flash system that's not going to give them increased performance. So flash has a huge benefit on the primary storage side, especially where you're doing lots of transactions, data warehousing and database transactions and ordering transactions and bank, you know, transactions, etc. But in backup storage, first of all, if you're in line, it's not going to bring any performance, and all the products are in line except for X-Grid. And secondly, you wouldn't be able to afford the cost in backup. So I think flash does not have a place in backup, except for inline products can get a benefit of accelerating their hash tables with the flash.
So, well, let's talk about that, because in the ExaGrid model, if your landing zone was flash, that's got to help you maybe a little bit on the ingest. But my thought is more of the recovery, if some of the products, depending on your backup software, lets you spin up like their instant recovery models, where they might spin it up on the backup appliance. Like, do you see any benefit there?
Yeah, so there's two questions there. Let me answer the first one and then the second one. On the first question, could you get better performance? Of course, anytime you're going to write to flash versus spinning disk, it's going to be faster. And to restore, if there's no, as I mentioned earlier, deduplication in the way, which is the case of the ExaGrid landing zone. However, you got two other angles there. The first, people for that additional performance. Is the performance we're giving them good enough? And so far, everybody believes it is. But believe it or not, often we're waiting. We can actually take in data faster. There's a lot of different parts of backup that doesn't necessarily run at full speed, right? So a lot of the times, the people aren't running the full ingest into our box. So if we were to put flash, it's overkill unless they fix the entire rest of the environment, media servers, you know, network, et cetera, to make sure they could feed the data that best. The second is, as we talk to customers, they're not willing to pay that extra money for the extra performance right. They're going to get in backup. And just not, as it is, they're saying, cut your price down. Don't bring your price up by 4X because, you know, your landing zone is half the price. So unfortunately, you know, the price, I think, you know, really sets that back. Your second question, again, I lost track. What was the second question on the flash?
It was probably about recovery. So if we're going to do spin up a VM, the increased read speed might be important there.
Right. So we look all the time at, should people be spinning up VMs on ExaGrid? And believe it or not, the customers we deal, we have 2,700 customers worldwide, right? We've got Bose speakers, New Balance sneakers, Microchip, Norwegian Cruise Lines, Dot Foods, Goya Foods, Brinks, Bridgestone Tire, Firestone Tire, right? You know, some real names that everybody knows, and I could sit here and spot out names for probably the next 30 minutes. They tend to not want to spin up a VM on the backup. They always seem to have primary storage where they'll restore from ExaGrid and spin it up in their primary storage environment. So I think it's a cool thing to talk in backup about, hey, I got this little bit of space over here if you want to spin up a VM or two, which is what most companies that talk about that have. They don't allow you to spin them all up, right? They don't have the room. They get a little bit of flash over in the corner. They say, hey, if you want to spin up 10 VMs. But we have found and we have seen no pressure from yet is customers saying we want to be able to spin those VMs up on Exagrid. I'd say 99% of our customers spin that up in primary storage. They restore it from Exagrid and then spin it up in primary storage.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. And it's actually one of the things that we sometimes struggle with when we do these reviews or coverage is to try to figure out what's marketing BS and what's being done in the real world. And we've got to talk to a lot of end users about that because it's not, you know, it's not just backup software or backup appliance. There are so many claims made. And one of our constant frustrations is around this concept of flash, because we'll have vendors, and many of them are guilty of this. They'll say, this new server is great for, you know, AI machine learning workloads or whatever the hot button is. And I'll say, well, why is that? And they said, well, because, you know, it's fast. It's got the latest SSDs or CPUs or whatever. I'm like, okay, well, just because you've got a bunch of stuff in there doesn't necessarily translate into being good at that workload. But we see that all the time. And, maybe this is part of it. Intuitively, flash seems faster, is faster, but it's still a pricing issue, which makes sense. I mean, even you would never want to use QLC drives for this task, but those are the ones that are most often cited as getting price close to disk once you factor in data reduction. But I think the 15 terabyte Intel QLCs, we were just looking at it, run about $3,000 a pop.
Yeah, but so. Remember what you just did. I didn't mean to cut you off. They only factor data reduction on the flash side, but not the HDD side. It's actually not a fair comparison. They'll say, oh, I come very close to HDD because I'm doing deduplication on the flash and I'm storing less data. But you're storing the folder on HDD. Well, put that same deduplication in HDD, and relatively speaking, it goes down linearly price for price. So the price of flash is no better. I can tell you this. The cheapest flash out there that's enterprise available is no better than 6 or 8 times the price. So flash is great for certain primary storage applications. Who wouldn't want flash, right? It's faster. That's all, call a spade a spade. It's much faster. Are you willing to pay for it in backup? In all the inline deduplication appliances, the ones I've been mentioning, like the HPs and the Dells and the Veritases, you know, they're not going to benefit from anyway because doing all inline deduplication and data rehydration from a deduplicated data pool every time you want to do a restore. And then on top of that, you were mentioning earlier, run a VM. You can't run a VM on a data domain or an HP store once you're a Veritas appliance. And why? They're all deduplicated data pools. They don't have a disk cache landing zone like Exagrid to even be able to run a VM. So picture this. If the customers really wanted that capability, I mean, you go into the net backup world, you know, which, as you know, dominates the enterprise, right? And you'll see a lot of data domain in Veritas appliances. You can't run a VM off of that, even if you wanted to. It's a deduplicated data pool. There's no landing zone. You have to restore it to primary storage. So, you know, in that entire world, they're restoring it to primary storage.
Yeah, it's funny. And listening to you talk, it's kind of refreshing because we have a lot of these conversations and marketing or leadership people, they are often reserved when it comes to talking about competition, which is frustrating sometimes because you really want to get into it and say, well, what do you know? What do you think? And why do you think that's better, different, you know, whatever. A lot of executives won't do that. So I do appreciate your candor. And in fact, I saw a couple weeks ago, you're getting in a little tussle with Dell on backup. Are you guys bubbling up enough, I guess, to aggravate the larger competitors?
Yeah, and I think what happened with Dell is they put out an email to their entire channel and said, you know, it was one of their big channel forums, and they wanted to do a review of Dell data domain for about 40 minutes, and then they said they're going to keep the last 20 minutes to talk about Exagrid. And, you know, here we are thinking, wow, they're taking an hour to their entire channel to talk about just two products, Data Domain and Exagrid. You wouldn't do that if you, a company the size of Dell, if we weren't starting to irritate you. right? Why would you give us, you know, that awareness? Now, in our case, what's happening is we're walking into these shops, and if the customer has low-cost disk, and as I mentioned, I mean, you know, I mentioned to you, if it's low retention, we turn around and we walk out. But if it's, you know, monthlies and yearlies of retention, then we're going to save the customer a lot of money. If we walk into a Commvault shop, that Commvault shop mostly is using Commvault deduplication turned on to disk. That's usually what you'll see in Commvault. And what we can do is we can allow you to leave the Commvault deduplication turned on. We're the only company that does this. And we triple the deduplication ratio. Typically in the Commvault world, you'll see customers getting 5-to-1, 6-to-1 deduplication. They use 128 KB fixed length block, and that's what that'll give you. We then triple that, so we can leave deduplication on a Commvault and collapse the cost of the storage behind it. If we walk into a net backup shop, 90% of them are using data domain, and or they're using Veritas appliances. And we have been replacing those at a very big clip for three reasons. One is we're three times the performance of Veritas at data domain because of our disk cache landing zone versus inline deduplication. We're 20 times the restore speed, because our most recent backups are sitting in the landing zone ready to go and not need to be rehydrated from a deduplicated data pool such as data domain of Veritas. We have scale out, so the backup window stays fixed length as the data grows. We eliminate forklift upgrades and product obsolescence because of the scale out, and we're typically half the price. So we've been going into a lot of net backup shops and Commvault shops and either replacing the NetApp E-Series disk, you know, behind Commvault and Commvault shops because we can reduce the price by tripling the deduplication ratio, or we're walking into the net backup shops and then we're replacing Veritas and data domain by increasing the performance of backups, increasing the performance of restores, you know, giving the customer true scalability and cutting the price way down. And, you know, we, by the way, push evaluations. So we're right now 82% of the customers who take us in and evaluate us against ones they currently have will buy. So we push evaluations like crazy, where customers can test side by side in their shop using production data.
So yeah, that's an interesting perspective. And you hit on a couple things. I want to make sure we sort of revisit some of these, because in the time in the last 6 years since we've had the appliance, I would say very little has changed in backup and recovery, but a lot has changed at the same time, because we've seen cases where, you know, some of the ones that you've mentioned, you know, Veritas maybe or the Net Backup hasn't really modernized. When you look at something like what Veeam's been doing for the last, you know, whatever decade, and especially what some of the new guys on the block are doing, your Cohesity and some of the more software defined guys. At a high level, you partner with almost everybody from an application standpoint, and you know, because Veeam doesn't sell an appliance, they sell software, and so you're a nice combination. And in fact, that's what we run here in the lab. But how do you view the overall marketplace though between the software guys, the appliance guys, those that might sell converged offerings, or some of the new software defined guys like Cohesity that are, it seems like, lining up a partnership a week with you know, tier one storage, you know, providers. So I know it's a big question, but yeah, the market has changed. I just want to get your perspective on what that looks like to you today.
So remember that Exagrid focuses first. So when I answer this question, we focus on the upper mid market up to the enterprise. So we're not chasing the SMB accounts that might have 50 or 100 or 200 employees with 5, 10, 20, 30 terabyte of data. In fact, we'll do deals on the 50 terabyte of data, but we tend to focus on customers that have 50 terabyte of data upwards to petabytes, right? The majority of our new customer revenue comes from customers who are, you know, spending 100K or more with us. So that's where we fit in the market. So what do we see? There are the five traditional backup applications that are still out there: IBM Spectrum Protect, Veritas Net Backup, Commvault, Dell Networker, and Dell Avamar. Those are the big five established players. We're seeing Net Backup not growing and shrinking a little bit. We're seeing Commvault pretty much flat, I think, for their software sales, you know, new customer software sales. We're seeing Spectrum Protect dip a little bit, and we're seeing Networker and Avamar being replaced all the time. So who's replacing them, to your point? So those are the big five. You have Veeam. Veeam's a billion-dollar company now. And we do a lot of business with Veeam. We're very close to Veeam on many fronts. We've done lots of integrations with Veeam Solver and the Veeam Data Mover and so forth. So we actually do quite a bit of business with Veeam. And then you have Cohesity and Rubrik. Now, Cohesity and, now, by the way, we work behind Networker. We work behind Spectrum Protect. We work behind NetBackup, Calm Vault, you know, et cetera. In fact, we're certified by Veritas for NetBackup Accelerator, for NetBackup AIR, for working with their hardware appliances, OST. You know, we've got all of the NetBackup certifications from Veritas, you know, from their test labs. So we work with all of those products, you know, and we work with Veeam. The two newer guys, Cohesity and Rubrik, I wouldn't put them in the same sentence, and here's why. Rubrik seems to be losing a lot of steam and be down market, meaning more of an SMB play. So we don't see Rubrik that much anymore. We used to see them quite a bit years ago when they first came out and there was confusion in the market, but they've all but disappeared. We get on our sales calls once a month. You know, we ask the sales team, you know, are you seeing them as much? And they've disappeared. And they're pushed down, I think. You know, they're really good when a customer has 4 weeks of retention and they want to put the rest in the cloud. Cohesity tends to be doing much better and growing in the upper market. So we do see Cohesity, but we don't see Rubrik. Cohesity is end-to-end, meaning they sell both the front end and the back end, right? I mean, they sell the backup application right through the backup storage. And unlike the other backup applications, Calm Vault, or a Veeam, or a Spectrum Protect, or a NetBackup, who will allow you to buy any storage you want, with Cohesity, you have to use their back-end software. You can buy third-party hardware if you want to run it on HP, or Dell, or NetApp, or whatever, but it's still their back-end software. They're one layer of code that goes through end-to-end. With Cohesity, you know, it's a next-generation new-age product, I think, you know, compared to some of the older school backup applications. It is expensive. They use what's called erasure coding. Erasure coding requires you to, you know, have a lot more hardware involved because of that. Erasure coding is much slower, so they're not fast. The other backup applications like Calm Vault or Veeam will be much faster because they're using erasure coding. They also do inline deduplication, which slows their backups down. And we're guessing, but we think maybe they're getting 3-to-1 to 5-to-1 deduplication in there somewhere. And so they're getting some deduplication ratio, but they go through a lot of disk. So we do see them. We do see them growing. It looks like a good product to us. There's like any product, pros and cons. And I think if any product sticks, that might be the one that does. I think Rubrik is, like I said, fading away in the market for lots of reasons. Veeam is a rocket ship. People are buying Veeam like it's candy that's going out of style. And if you don't get it now, you know, you're not going to get your chance at the bite of the apple. So Veeam is growing like crazy. I think Calm Vault and NetBackup are two very solid products that are going to be around for a long time. And I think the products I think you'll see disappear will definitely be Network Avamar and Spectrum Protect. And if we were to look down the road 6 or 7 years in the upper bin market to the enterprise, we're going to be talking Cohesity, Veeam, Calm Vault, and NetBackup.
Innovation cycle that we see, you know, in any industry. But the fact that the five guys that you mentioned didn't really take the new guys seriously initially, Veeam, that, you know, Veeam was always seen as the rogue IT that initially backup admins or general IT guys could buy on their credit card for $9 a month or whatever it was, right? And now Veeam's in, but Veeam was in not necessarily for feature set. Veeam was in because they were easy to use and they were inexpensive and they were fast and they were seen as innovative and growing and, you know, like all the positive attributes you want in a company you work with. And then the rest of the industry didn't really notice. They sort of derided Veeam and trash talked them. And then with Cohesity and Rubrik coming in, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, again, we still didn't really see a big change in the way the big guys were acting. Now, Dell's done some work to modernize, and some of the other guys have pushed down that road, but they really haven't made any sort of fundamental changes to even, like, in most cases, UIs are still pretty old by the standards of what these guys are doing in the software-defined world. What's your take on that? Why didn't they take these new entrants more seriously?
Well, I think it's always the same, right? If you've got a huge, huge business and a huge customer base, you don't feel it, right? And when you don't feel it, it takes you time before you do feel it. I think Veeam, first of all, came up from the SMB, and that's not where NetBackup and Commvault and Network and those guys live. So Veeam grew off the backs of the backup execs of the world, not of the big five we just talked about. So very often, if you look at the world in general in high tech, you'll see these companies start in the SMB and then they move their way up market over time, right? And that's what Veeam did. So I think for a long time, they were under the radar for these guys. Then they started to break into the accounts, but only for a piece of the action, right? They originally were born to have a better VMware story, which they did a great job of. To your point, very, very good for VMware, very easy to use, very low cost. And so as a result, Veeam started to penetrate just small departments, right? And then one day you wake up and every account has a little bit of Veeam in it, and then that Veeam starts spreading because the customer likes it better than what they're using. And over time, in the earlier days, I think the big guys weren't worried because Veeam didn't have a lot of the enterprise level or non-VMware features. And in fact, Veeam just rolled out earlier this year, Veeam 10. You know, they can now do things like HANA and VR tools and Oracle RMAN and NDMP dumps and things like that that they couldn't do before. So they're becoming more enterprise, right, as each release comes out. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing is that I believe that Commvault and NetBackup are advancing the products. I'm watching them carefully. I don't see Spectrum Protect Network or Avamar advancing the problems. I see Dell keep trying to do these bundles, and none of them seem to work. Hey, I'm going to bundle this product with that product and rename it. I'm going to bundle this product with that bundle and rename it, right? So they're trying to do these different bundles and renaming. It's more marketing. But there's no change in the products beneath it. So I think the two that are advancing is Commvault and NetBackup, which is why I believe they'll be around for a long time. Also, Commvault, Sanjay, their CEO, is really pushing to reduce the cost reduce the complexity of Commvault. And he's got big initiatives on to keep making Commvault more simple and more flexible. So I do see with a new CEO there a lot of work getting done in the area of Commvault. I think also Veritas spinning out and becoming a separate company, the same thing. I think you see a lot of work there with Veritas. So this is why I believe in all the years I've been around backup that Commvault and NetBackup will be very strong in the future, but as will Cohesity and Veeam. And even Cohesity, that's... by the way, you know, someday I'd love to be able to have Exagrid work behind Cohesity, right? We work behind Veeam. We let Veeam keep their dedupe on, and we further deduplicate it. As I mentioned, we're with every certification from Veritas with NetBackup. We can dedupe the Commvault data and collapse the storage, and I'd love to do the same with Cohesity.
Well, I mean, they're doing deals now, it looks like. On the capability side, let me talk to you a little bit about cloud, both in terms of potentially delivering your appliance as a service in the cloud, and then what you guys view in terms of cloud's role in backup, whether it's extending an appliance or whatever. But what's your take on what's going on in the cloud from a backup perspective, and what do you guys have to do to be in line to support your customers' needs there?
Sure. So first of all, backup follows the primary storage. Wherever the primary storage is getting done is where the backup gets done. So if you're doing your primary storage in your own data center, that's where the primary site backup will be. Why? You're backing up every night, and it's a huge amount of data, right, that you're backing up. You back up 5 nights a week. If all of your primary data, because you shut your data centers down, are in AWS or Azure, guess where your backup has to be? Right there with it. So the backup follows the primary storage every time. In our world, what we see is customers are doing the majority of their data is still on site. So we're not getting a lot of customers saying to us, hey, what are you doing with the cloud? And I know that sounds counterintuitive, and I'll explain our cloud strategy because we know cloud's coming. But boy, we don't have a lot of cloud discussions because they are using a traditional backup application like we just discussed, backing up on site. Now, they replicate off site. So let's talk about replication. They can replicate to a DR site, right? And now, where's that DR site going to be? Well, it could be one of their own data centers. It could be a third-party hosting facility, or it could be Azure or AWS, right? It could be any one of those. As we've dug in with the customers, 90% of our customers are still backing up to a second data center, and about 10% are backing up to, you know, an AWS, right, like a public cloud. We have, for example, what we call the VDRT, the virtual DR target, which lives, let's say, in AWS. You replicate from our physical appliances on site into AWS, and then we write to S3 storage inside of AWS. Why aren't customers running to that? Why is it a small percentage of our customers using that? The reason is with backup, you're backing up 5 nights a week. You only have 6 or 7 hours to get the backups into the cloud before the next backup start. Maybe you've got up to 16 hours, depending on how you're set up. And as a result of that, you need a ton of bandwidth. So when people run the math, and they all do it in the end, the cost over 3 years, because you've got a monthly cost, of the bandwidth plus the AWS storage cost far exceeds the cost to put a data domain or an ExaGrid or whatever at one of your second data centers. Not only does it exceed the cost, but it's faster to recover from your own data center, right? If you've got stuff inside the cloud and you've got to get it back out to recover, unless you're just going to your point earlier, maybe spin up a VM or two. But if you want to run your entire environment, you've got to do a restore. It's just too hard to get it out of the cloud. And it's more secure doing it at your own data center. So the customers land on, I'm going to do my DR in the second data center. I am going to do it because it's cheaper, more secure, and faster to recover. Now flip it. If I'm an SMB account, somebody who's got like 5, 10, 15 terabyte, and I don't have a second data center, what's my only choice? My only choice is to go to the public cloud or an MSP, right? Somebody who set up a service to do this, whether it's a reseller or a third-party service provider, because I don't have a second data center to go to. And if you look at, and I've interviewed, 100 and something over time, all of the MSPs that offer backup as a service, all of the services like that, it's all SMB account. Why? Customers don't have a second data center. The minute a customer has a second data center, so the kind of customers ExaGrid sells to, you know, all have second data centers, right? Home builders are a $2 billion company. Kronos are a $2 billion company, right? Those are the kind of companies we're selling to. They have a second data center, and it's more secure, cheaper, and faster and better for them to just do their DR on the second data center. So we're seeing the SMB go to the cloud for DR because they don't have a second data center. We're seeing the upper mid-market to the enterprise staying replicating to the second data center. Now, what is going into the cloud? What are we hearing is going into the cloud? It's things that they can't do themselves. So, for example, DevOps. I put DevOps in the cloud. Why? Because every once in a while, I need a ton of compute all at once. I got to compile some code or whatever. So if I don't, or I got to do a bunch of testing all at once, how do I get all that compute just for a month when I didn't need it for the last 6 months, when I have a bubble of compute? That's a great application to put inside the cloud. Other ones, archive storage. Archive storage is perfect for the cloud. I tell all of our customers, you should put your archive storage in Glacier. It's less than a penny a gigabyte. And they say, but how? You're talking out of both sides of your mouth. You're saying, don't put your backup in the cloud, put your archive. And I say, here's why. Archive data is the primary data you haven't touched in, let's say, 4 years. You trickle it out to the cloud. Don't worry about how much bandwidth it's going to take, because it could take you 6 months to get it out there. Who cares? Just start trickling it out there. When it gets out there, it gets out there. When it does, you can finally delete it out of your primary storage. You don't have to care about how much bandwidth you have, because you don't have a time limit to get anything done. So let's say it takes you 6 months to trickle your archive data out to the public cloud. Great. Now it's out there. Delete it from your primary storage, and you just freed up a ton of high-speed, high-reliable primary storage. Good for you. And by the way, you want to restore from archive? This is data you haven't touched in 4 years. What's the likelihood you're going to touch it again? And if you do, how many files are you really going to ask for? So bandwidth coming the other way, still not a problem.
Right. You're not going to pull that 4 terabytes back. Right,
now I'll flip it to backup. I got a petabyte of data. First of all, I'm backing up every night, and God knows that, you know, I've got maybe 100 terabyte a night with changes and so on that I might be backing up, or 50 terabyte a night. How much bandwidth am I going to need to get that into the cloud every day? And I got to do that within a certain fixed number of hours. And then I want that 1 petabyte all back to do a restore for a disaster recovery, or even 100 or 200 terabyte. I can't get it back. Backup is active data. It's data that's changing every day. and you've got to get it into the cloud every single day before the next backup starts. And when you want it, you want a lot of it back. Archive data is inactive data. It's data that hasn't changed in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, probably 4 years is the most common policy. You push it out there, you're never going to touch it again. Just leave it out there, and if you need it, you only need a couple files at a time. So archive is very different than backup data. When it comes to the time it takes to get it into the cloud, the amount of bandwidth you need to get into the cloud, how much time you have to get into the cloud, and how much time and bandwidth you have to get it back. Two different worlds. So archive data should all go into Glacier. Backup data should go to your second DR site. And by the way, we sell software to let you put in AWS. We don't care. we don't push you that way because we can't do it. We just doesn't work. It mathematically doesn't work.
Well, it's nice, too, that the object stores, essentially, that they're using for that is also the lowest cost storage that they sell, too. So a handy way to leverage the cloud for data that's not.
Well, it's the lowest active. Cost because you don't. Right. It's an inactive data with mm-hmm. backup. You can't put it on that storage. Why? Every time you bring in another weekly or a monthly when it comes to the month, you're deleting or purging out the previous one. You can't do that with Glacier. You have to have it in S3 or S3IA storage because you're forever deleting. And when you access storage inside of AWS, you can't write, read, write, delete inside of Glacier. Glacier is, you put it there, you leave it there. It's for archive data. That's its purpose. If for active data, it's S3 or S3IA, and backup is active data. So you're constantly writing, constantly changing, constantly deleting data out, and every week, you're purging out. If I'm keeping 8 weeks, every week, once you hit the 8 weeks, I'm purging out a week every time I write a week. Mm-hmm. You can't do that in Glacier.
So give me, if you can, 60 seconds or less on tape then, on where that fits in on this archive tier. And tape is the most malign technology in the enterprise, I think, but it's still everywhere. But I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it.
Yeah. So let me do a tape thing, but then at some point in time, I want you to ask me about our new ransomware release. Is that a deal?
I'll get there.
Okay. So tape, you know, tape, of course, forever was the cheapest, right? But full of challenges, right? Because of the media type it is. So tape still has a place in two places, I think. One, if you want to archive things and you don't want to put it in the cloud. It is actually cheaper to put things on tape. For archive data, let's say you've got videos or x-rays or something that you want to keep for 10, 20, 30 years, you're going to put that on tape because you're not paying monthly for it. So it's archive, like a lot, if you look at a lot of like Quantum, for example, a lot of where their tape goes, it's not to backup, it's to archive now, right? Archiving mm-hmm. videos and things. And it's still cheaper than paying a monthly forever fee inside of the cloud. Archive is also good in backup for very, very long-term stuff. If you are going to keep 7 years of monthlies, boy, you're not going to put that on Exagrid data domain anybody, right? You may put 3 years of monthlies on the Exagrid of the data domain, but you're going to take the remaining 4 years of monthlies, which is 48 more copies, and probably put those to tape. So as a third tier, at that point, you want to keep the stuff that you need more in. If I'm going to get audited financially or I've got a legal discovery, etc., I want that stuff on disk. Right? If somebody comes and sues me and says, I want to look at this stuff as it looked 2 and 3 years ago, or the SEC comes in and wants to audit me and I want to look at your books from last year and the year before, you want that stuff on the backup system on disk. But if you've got stuff you just got to keep for legal or regulatory reasons or even financial reasons, but it's really old, you want to keep that on tape still. Tape still has a place.
All right. And I'll let you get to ransomware. I want one more hardware question, storage question. So, I mean, probably nobody sees, or maybe somebody sees, but you guys see a lot of hard drives in your environments, in your customers. We're seeing still some decent growth there, 16, 18, 20 terabyte drives. But in some cases, because a lot of them are targeted specifically to you know, sequential read-write activity like SMR. What's the place for that technology in your view for Exagrid, and or do you care as long as the drive delivers the I/O requirements you guys have for whatever the appliance is?
Yeah, so I can't talk about other applications because that's not the business we're in, but I can talk about backup, mm-hmm. as you can tell. Very passionate about backup. So in our case, every time new drives come out that are bigger and denser, or, you know, that there's more capacity in them, we have to look, first of all, is, you know, what's the performance going to be? If we start to put those in our solution, we've got only so many spindles, you know, what's that going to do to performance? And will that, hurt our performance, help our performance? At the same time, you're looking at cost, right? And those two sometimes are in contradiction with each other, where, you know, if you go to the largest density drives, you may not be able to get the performance you need to keep up with the backups, but you can lower the cost dramatically. So we're always trying to find that balance in the sweet spot. We'll tend to be one or two drives back, as are all the backup players, right, from the density, because you wait for the price to come down to get you, you know, to and also to meet the performance you need. So we're forever playing that game, testing in the labs and saying, what is the right drives at the right performance, at the right price, to get the job done at the right price, and where's the sweet spot? And it's different each time a new generation comes out, and we're always playing that dance to find the sweet spot.
All right, fair enough. So I hear you're interested in talking about ransomware. It's good timing. It's certainly up front of mind because we can't go 2 or 3 days without someone, you know, reporting it, whether it's Garmin or whoever. Actually, I was just talking to a small medical practice local here, and they got hit over last weekend, just over, you know, some sort of nonsense. I think the small hospitals and doctor's offices are pretty highly targeted with this stuff. And in fact, for our listeners, Rick Vanover and I are going to be doing a live stream. He's from Veeam. On their take on ransomware, the September the 4th. So, you know, if you're hearing our pod before then, make sure to check that out on our YouTube channel. But all right, Bill, give it to me. What's your ransomware take?
So we, like we did when we looked at backup and said, wow, you can't just do disk because it's too expensive, and you can't do inline deduplication appliances because they're too slow for backup restores and they don't scale. And we had to create something different. We've done the same thing with ransomware. So we looked at ransomware and we said, what's the real situation here? The situation is the hackers get in, they encrypt the primary data. They somehow get a hold of the backup application or the backup storage. If they get a hold of the backup app, they issue commands to say, delete all of the backups in the storage. If they get a hold of the backup storage, they issue commands that say, delete all the data. Now you've got a situation where your primary data is encrypted. Your backup data is gone and there's no way to recover, and you have to pay the ransom. Now, you pay the ransom. Another problem occurs you hadn't thought about. You then have to start your backups all over again. You've lost all your retention. If you were keeping 8 weeklies, 36 monthly, 7 yearlies, it's gone. You have to start all over again. You've lost all your retention. So we looked at this problem and said, phew, this is a big problem. Then we looked at everybody saying, well, let's use some kind of retention lock strategy. But if you do, that's a whole nother pool of storage. Very expensive. You got to go now do a complete backup and do a retention lock storage pool separate from your backup pool. And that's what a lot of companies are doing. And you're doubling, not quite doubling, but you're bringing on another huge cost of storage to try to solve it that way. So when we looked at it, we said, hey, time out. Do you really need retention lock? And we said, no, you don't. How long do you really need that data for? I don't know. 7 days, 14 days, 21 days? What do you mean? Well, if somebody has an event on Monday, you don't think by Tuesday they know they had an event? All the data is encrypted. Nobody can work. You know you had an event. So we looked at our product and we said, we've got some unique advantages here. And the first one is that we have a two-tier approach. We have a network-facing tier, our landing zone, and we have a non-network-facing tier, which is called a retention or repository. That non-retention, the non-network-facing tier is an air gap. Hacker can't get to that second tier. You got to run through our code to get to it. You'd have to be inside of our object code to be able to get to it. It's not on the network. It's in the box connected only to the front through our software. So when you go issue those delete commands, standard primary storage, sitting behind backup, a NetApp E-Series or a Nimble, whatever, that data is deleted. a data domain, HP store into our test, that data is deleted. So what do we do different? You issue the delete command, and our landing zone gets deleted. It's from that point that our software then says, now go delete the retention area of our product, which is tier two. Mm-hmm. Remember this, we have all of the retention in there, the most recent backup and all the history. Only the most recent backup was in the landing zone. So we added a policy ability secured by multiple layers of passwords to set up a policy that says, and somebody wants to do a delete. They issue a delete command. They get a hold of the storage through SIFS, or they come right in through Commvault or NetBackup or Veeam or Spectrum Protect or whatever. We don't delete it. If you say set that up for 30 days, don't delete, we don't delete the data. We're like a bad teenager. We say we deleted it, but we didn't.
Yeah, right? I've got a teenager. Thankfully, not a bad one, though.
There you go. So well, all teenagers will lie a little bit, I think. All of them. A little bit. Just a little bit. Yeah. So basically what happens is you have the event on Monday. They crypt the primary storage. They delete the data in the landing zone or the data domains or the storage or whatever. And we didn't delete it in the retention zone. So as soon as you find out you had an event, you put our system into a halt phase. You do the restore and you call it a day. And all the retention is still there. So by delaying the deletes, we're saying you've got a period of time that if by mistake somebody issues a delete command or a hacker comes in and issues a delete command, you have a fail-safe in order to say, you know what, nothing really happened. It was a delay so that if I realize the mistake occurred or it was done intentionally by a hacker, I've got weeks, so you can set that for 7 days or 10 days or 14 days or 21 days or whatever you want to set that to, up to 30 days. The second thing we've got is all of our deduplicated objects in the retention zone are immutable by their very nature. We don't delete or overwrite them because we're always appending. Anytime new data comes in and we have new deduplication objects, where those are new objects we don't have, we're adding them, right? Because we're looking and saying, geez, we've already got everything else. No, this is something, this particular zone is new with these particular bytes and it is new, so we'll save those. So if somebody encrypts the data in the primary storage and it gets written to our landing zone, or they come in and encrypt the data on our landing zone and now we start trying to deduplicate that data into the ExaGrid because it's encrypted, we're just adding deduplication objects on, but not deleting any of the past ones or overwriting any of the past ones. So when you figure out that that particular situation happened, we just roll back to a day or two before when the event happened, get rid of the blocks that came in as part of the encryption data, but all the rest of your deduplicated objects, all the rest of your retention is still intact. So we've got two ways to solve the two problems in ransomware, the delete and wipe out all the backup data, or encrypt the data came into the backup system, or somebody tried to encrypt the data on the backup system. And we have solutions for both of those. And we're the only ones that have anything like this, that have an air gap with a second tier with delayed deletes, and then non-network facing second tier. And then also have immutable objects or deduplication objects that guard against the encryption problem.
Hmm. That's pretty firm. Are you?
Yeah, that ships in September 19th.
Oh, okay, great.
Yep, and we started talking about it to our customers a few months ago, and oh my God, the response is incredible, as you can imagine. And ready for the? Here's the kicker. It takes for every week of delayed deletes you keep, takes another 2% repository space. So if you were to keep 30 days, it's like 10% more repository space to do this. It's the least expensive solution in the market by far.
So, it's interesting. It's one that we struggle with sometimes because of the messaging and where do you have that ransomware conversation in an organization and what do you do? Or do you put the weight on your backup application, which might not even really have an answer there. So as you're talking to your customers about this, what's their level of comfort or even understanding of the risk of ransomware and where in their IT org they should be putting that effort to work?
So every backup person we talk to knows they've got to somehow guard against the backup data being deleted because they're the recovery data. So they're trying to shore up and firm up the backup applications. They're trying to shore up the networks. And what do you got to do? You got to try to prevent, right? That's the security team's issue, right? The security team has to make sure that you've got, intrusion prevention, and you've got firewalls, and you've got all the things it's going to take to stop a hacker from getting into the network at all. But if that hacker gets into the network, right, Now you've got the problem of, once they're inside and they encrypt the data, how do you protect the backup data? So the backup team has to be involved if the security team comes to them and says, hey, we have to make sure that this backup is hardened, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's crucial. And on top of it, think about that some percentage of these are inside jobs. A disgruntled employee, somebody trying to make a few bucks on the side, they're finding that not all of these are external, right? And I don't want to claim percentages because I've seen different articles that claim different percentages, but it's shockingly high as to how many of these are inside jobs. And so as a result of that, we've got a two-tier password system so that you need both the admin and a VP or the admin plus a director to be able to change the policy so that, that one password just doesn't do it. You know, I like to say it's like on the Star Trek Enterprise when they say, they want to self-destruct. Spock, Kirk, and McCoy all have to put their codes in, right? It's the belt and suspenders of how do you destruct the Enterprise. Absolutely. In fact, just so you know, 98.8% of our customers are on yearly maintenance and support, and they get all full version releases. So every one of our customers on maintenance and support, which is 98.8%.
Yeah, well, we're the 0.01 that's not paying for support, so you're still going to have to pull some levers for me. All right. Well, thanks. We really appreciate you jumping in today. This is a great conversation.